Hey, it's April 26, and this is Beginner's Puck, a podcast for hockey fans both new and old.
Deb, where has my hockey gone?
I don't know. What is this? Like, there's two nights that we had no hockey. I think other than Christmas and maybe the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. But even then, there was hockey on.
Right. Yeah. It's wonky hockey, but it was still hockey players on ice doing things.
Right. And even over Christmas, there was like Junior Worlds, which was super exciting. Mm-hmm. Now, there has been some like world action, like the under-18s were playing and stuff.
That's true. But it's harder to find.
Mm-hmm. There's been some stuff on the NHL Network, but I don't know. Is this like what the wilderness summer months are like?
It's the longest couple months of the year, Deb. I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. It sucks. It absolutely sucks. But, you know, think about it this way. All of those players have been going so hard, especially the ones in the playoffs, as we will talk about. And they need some time. You know, they're human bodies. They're not robots. They need to sort of rest, recoup. You know, get things back in gear so that they can come back and be awesome hockey boys again next season. It still sucks,
though.
This is
true. It's terrible. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to come up with some plans.
Yeah, the withdrawal symptoms they're rough. And I'm not a big sports fan of any other sports. However, I live with a baseball fan. So it's like, I'm not a huge baseball fan to start with. But when it's on and there's no hockey, it's like it's taunting me. Like baseball saying, ha ha. And I'm just like, I hate you, baseball.
See, I've been really cheating on soccer with hockey, so maybe I'll have to.
Yeah, you can get back into your soccer. See, Anna, to me, soccer is just big, slow hockey, so it always feels like it's like, why aren't they going faster? Why do they have to go so
it
far?
It's a little true. Mm-hmm. I was the last time I was at the Union game. I looked. I'm like, wow, this is a really big field,
isn't it?
I'm so used to like contained ice hockey. So, yeah, it's been rough. We're gonna have to come up with maybe like weekly hockey movie nights.
Something like that.
A hockey movie together. That would be fun. Mm-hmm. Something. I don't know. Because this is rough and it's only been 2 days. Because round one of the playoffs is open. And we broke a record, didn't we?
We did. No surprise, considering what we talked about last time.
Yeah, last week we talked about overtimes and how it seemed like there was more of them in this playoff round. And we were like, oh, but that's just an illusion. Because the most that has ever been played in a round one is 17. Well, ha. Not anymore. Now it's 18 because this last round one, we had 18 overtimes.
Mm-hmm. And that's it's extra surprising because none of this series went to game seven. There wasn't a single game seven anywhere. And we still had that many overtime. Wow.
So, yeah, people were losing. Well, except for Chicago. But for the most part, people were losing really close games. I mean, there wasn't many steamrolling, well, except for Chicago.
Right.
So,
yeah,
that should be like our tagline, except for Chicago.
Yeah, it was interesting that you know, as much as people were complaining about the structure of the playoffs, they were all really well matched matchups, except, like you said, except for Chicago, which hilariously, Chicago was the number one seed and the Predators were in the second wildcard position. So,
yeah. And I'm just thinking, how many people had Chicago going all the way?
Yeah, I can't remember if I did. I think I did.
Yeah. But, you know, I had to laugh. I didn't have to laugh. That's not appropriate. Mm-hmm. I did have to ponder because there's been a little bit of, you know, there's some soul searching that goes on after your team gets knocked out in round one, especially if you're the number one team in your division. Mm-hmm. And Chicago, there's been lots of noise coming out of Chicago about things they need to change and things they have to do. And they did say something that I really appreciated. And it was, you know, it wasn't fluke. It wasn't luck. We were beat by a better team. Nashville was a good team. Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate that it wasn't bounces didn't go our way or the usual excuses that you hear at the end of that sort of thing when it is a tight race or, you know, we were injured or something happened or this happened. It was like we were just beat by the better team. And I do appreciate the acknowledgement that they were outplayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's classy. And that's, you know, not making excuses. And I know many pundits have talked about how Nashville was really sort of underrated throughout the season. And, you know, since it was mostly the pundits that I heard saying that are not people that I had followed terribly closely throughout the year, so there's like the little part of me that's like, were you guys saying this all year long, or are you just saying it now to sound smart? In retrospect, hindsight is 20/20.
That's true. Very true. So let's just do a quick recap of the end, because we talked about all the teams that were eliminated in our last episode to date. So we've had a few more knocked out to finally decide things. And, well, of course, you were there for the final game of one, in mm-hmm. a way, for
in
when
way.
Edmonton Oilers finally put San Jose to bed. So what was that like?
Oh, my goodness. It was unbelievable. It was, first of all, they sold out the entire rink. And actually, it wasn't the entire arena, because they didn't sell, I think, the first like five or six rows down by the ice, mm-hmm. because from there you couldn't see the Jumbotron to actually watch the game. But other
right,
than...
So you weren't at the actual game. You were right. at Rogers Place to watch the game on the Jumbotron.
Correct. Yeah. So basically, okay. I paid $5, which went to charity, to get me a seat to watch TV with about 18,000 pals. And... it was, the atmosphere there was just like being at a regular game. There were just as many people in the concourses. There were people, you know, waiting in line for food. The only differences were there's no 50-50 draw, which I was a little sad about because I missed my 50-50s. And there were no players on the ice. At one point, Hunter, our terrifying mascot, did go out.
Cat.
Yeah. He did go out on the ice during a commercial break and played his little drum and got the crowd chanting, "Let's go Oilers," and posed for some pictures and stuff. So that was funny and cute. But otherwise, it really just felt like a regular game. The "Let's go Oilers" chants happened all throughout the game, even though the players couldn't hear us. There was plenty of cheering and people doing the wave, which I just have to say, I'm fine with a wave. I think it's a neat thing, but it shouldn't happen when there's hockey going on. It's a thing for commercial breaks or when they're doing, you know, reviews of offsides or something like that. Otherwise, sit your butt down in your seat because I'm trying to watch the freaking game. So I'll get off my soapbox there.
Was there any commentary from the organization about that level of support or anything from the players to acknowledge that there was a full arena of people watching a game on basically on television?
Actually, yeah, they had a specially recorded little thing from Wayne Gretzky himself that played on the screen before they switched over to the live feed of the game. However, everybody was screaming so loud, I have no idea what he said. But it looked, based on the looks on his face, he seemed very happy and proud of the support that the Oilers had gotten. I wonder if that's on YouTube somewhere, because I would be interested in hearing what he had to say. I mean, because they were showing the live feed of the game, we were also getting the commentary from, you know, the, I can't remember who was calling that game, but it didn't really matter because you couldn't hear it. So there was just too much yelling and screaming. At the very end of the game, when the Oilers won, they rang the goal horn, or so I was told after the fact,
neat.
Because I couldn't hear it. It was too loud in there. You literally couldn't hear it. And I actually took video on my phone of the moment. Like, I started recording just like, you know, 2 seconds before the game was over.
I just can imagine that kind of energy and just being around that. I can, as a player, to know that your city is behind you that much, that they're willing to crowd into an arena, that has to be bolstering going into round two, because they've got a tough competition ahead.
It's
with
gonna
playing
be,
Anaheim.
It's going to be rough. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a few other series that were decided as well. New York Rangers bested the Montreal Canadiens. I was a little sad about that. I was really hoping that Montreal would pull out. They've done so much to try to position themselves to really get the win. I mean, there was the huge Weber-PK Subban trade last summer. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of sort of 11th hour right before the trade deadline to sort of bolster up their defense. And it just didn't happen. And I just, you know, people always say these things come down to like the battle of the goalies. And you had two of the best goalies in the league against each other. And it was just Lundqvist's. He just was, you know, that much better, just a little bit better.
Yeah, like I was saying that, you know, the teams evenly matched. It does kind of suck that both of those goalies ended up going up against each other in the first round, because they are, you know, they are the best, I really think, or at least they're right up there. And mostly I sighed because in my original version of my bracket, I had New York winning. And then like, and that was mostly done based on just gut instinct. And then I kind of thought about it and I changed it. So I changed it to Montreal. So I'm sort of kicking myself. But there's a little part of me, because I love PK Subban so much, I'm a little bit happy that Montreal didn't make it past the first round and Nashville did, because it's like, see, you got rid of PK Subban, he's freaking awesome, and look at his team now. But I'm very sad for Carey Price, who I love.
Yeah, I was a little funny because, oh, hockey Twitter, you're so witty and funny, and somebody had tweeted that it was Subban fraud that Montreal was out, and that there's all sorts of drama about that, about that trade, about PK Subban and his battles with the coach. So, like, just look it up, just Google it. You'll come into more of the information than you possibly could want.
Yep.
Let's see, Ottawa Senators. I did not see that one coming. They beat out Boston, which is what? How did that happen?
It just did.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise. I mean, it wasn't a surprise like Nashville and Chicago, but it was a little like, caught me off guard a little bit.
I feel like Ottawa is just sort of the forgotten sleeper team. Even in Canada, they don't get a ton of press in comparison with like the other teams. And at one point, I know Deb, you and I earlier in the season were talking about how like, who do we even know who's on the Senators? Like, what names? And obviously now I know some names because I've been paying more close attention. But I think that after watching the games closely, I'm not that surprised to see that Ottawa won because they were playing very well. But I think that they've been poorly neglected in sort of the media and certainly in my household as far as being watched. So yeah, I was not thinking they were going to win simply because I didn't know anything about them. I just hadn't been paying attention.
Yeah, they're one of those teams, and there's a couple of them, at least for me, and I'm sure everybody has this personally, even if there's levels of hockey fans that, like, they know their team, you know what I mean? And that's, like, that's their whole focus on, and there's players, there's people that just, like, you know, players from all over the league or, you know, sort of follow hockey in general, and I am a follow hockey in general sort of person, so I know a little bit about a lot of teams, but there's a few teams that, like, your eyes sort of glance right over, like the Silence in Doctor Who. Like, after you stop looking at them, you completely forget about them.
Totally.
And they're just not that memorable. And the Sens were one of them. And for a while, it was, you know, Winnipeg was another. And Minnesota, for some reason, is just not sticking with me. And that's just, and it's something I need to work on a little bit. But Ottawa's there for a long time. And then, of course, the one that nobody can stop talking about is the Washington Capitals knocked out the Toronto Maple Leafs in 6 games, 5 of which went to overtime, which is insane.
That is, yeah, that's some surprisingly well-matched teams there. Again, we had, you know, the Capitals being the first seed, not just being the first seed, but, you know, first overall with a number of wins and points. And, I mean, it was...
They were top of the NHL.
They really, really were. And, you know, with Toronto just squeaking in by the hairs of their hairless chinny chin chins, you know?
They have no hair. The hair on their knees or something, because there's nothing on their face.
So the fact that they put the poor Capitals through what they did, they should be incredibly proud. And based on the way the Capitals played, I am worried for them in the next round.
I am a little worried for them as well, but I'm thinking that, and I've been listening to a lot of NHL SiriusXM. So, and of course, there's no lack of opinions, let me tell you, in sports punditry about this series.
Well, I'm sure.
And there's a little bit of a debate, and I'm not quite sure where I fall on this, that when you look at the bye weeks that everybody had this year that was built into the contract so that people, because of the World Cup of Hockey, vacations were cut short. Players had to come back and start playing earlier. So they built this bye week in, so everybody got a break sometime during the season. And it was, I don't even know how they structured who got the bye week when, but it happened throughout the whole year.
It was a computer program had to, like, you know, they used that to figure out the entire season.
Yeah, so, you know, you randomly, a team would have a week off.
Yep.
And statistically, I do believe that every team that came back off that bye week just didn't do well. Like it broke their momentum. And so there was a lot of debate as to whether, you know, the Caps are going up against Pittsburgh, the defending Stanley Cup champions who knocked out the Blue Jackets, you know, a few days earlier. So they've had a longer time to rest.
Ooh, good point.
And yeah, it's a good point. So, you know, they're giving their bodies a little bit of a rest because let's face it, everybody is battered and bruised at this point, if not nursing more serious injuries that they're just playing through, which we'll discuss that in a little bit. So there's a bit of a debate whether that rest is actually a good thing this time of year, or whether it's going to be an advantage or a disadvantage because of the bye week situation that happened. So whether the Capitals are coming off a really fiercely fought win in which they played really well, if that actually gives them a little bit of momentum going into the next series, or is it just going to be physically, mm-hmm. they're going up against a superior team, is it going to be too much for them? And I'm not quite sure where I fall on that.
That's interesting because, you know, I think about it, like when I have a really long, hard day and it gets toward the end of the day, I can't sit down and take a break because I will just stop and I will be done for the day.
Right.
I have to kind of keep pushing through until I get to it. So yeah, maybe there is some, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Washington came out perhaps won the first game, maybe even the first couple, but I still think that in the end, Pittsburgh is going to take it. I really don't think that Washington, I mean, unless they can start suddenly playing better than they were in the first round, mm-hmm. they kind of looked old and creaky, which is sad, but they did.
I think anybody's going to look old and creaky against Toronto because they're just so
well, that's true. Good point.
They still have that little streak of like really is not as disciplined as some of the older teams. And that's just because they haven't been coached as long, mm-hmm. you know. I do think that it's going to serve Washington well that they didn't steamroll over the team, that they did get a little bit of competition out of that because they did have to up their game. And I think that will only benefit them going into mm-hmm. a really hard series.
Yep. Well, I will be rooting for the Capitals. I just don't think they're going to win.
All right. So speaking of rooting, let's pretend our brackets are fresh and new since they've shattered
yep.
and they're broken. And let's talk about who you are going to pick going into round two. Mm. So I am going to pull up my bracket and see who we have left. It's my poor, sad, broken bracket, mm-hmm. I should say. So, all right, let's start with the Washington series.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, I think it's going to be Pittsburgh. That's not the bracket of my heart, but that's the bracket of my brain.
I'm going to stick with Washington. I just have, it's just blind faith. Let's be honest. I'm not even going to put any intellect behind this. I want them to win so badly. That wasn't always the case during the actual round one playoff series. I found my loyalties being somewhat divided, but now that Toronto's out, I am back to being all in with Washington. So that's the pick of my heart, and I'm going to stick with it. You go, Washington.
All right.
So we have, oh my gosh, the Rangers and the Senators. Like, what?
What's so weird? It just seems so strange to me.
Hmm. Right, who are you picking there?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go with the Senators. Simply because they're like the black hole team, which I didn't know to expect them to win the first one. And I really, I don't know enough to expect them to win the second one. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist is an amazing goalie. So I do feel like the Rangers have that in their back pocket. But maybe it's a pick of my heart a little bit too, but I'm going with the Canadian team. Yep.
This is a hard one for me because, I'm a sucker for a good narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Craig Anderson narrative for Ottawa this year has been so good. Now, for those of you who may not know, Craig Anderson actually missed a good chunk of the beginning of the season because for undisclosed reasons. And then it found out that his wife was diagnosed with cancer and he actually got a leave of absence to go be with her while she started her cancer treatments. And I do remember that game where his first game back was at Edmonton, wasn't it?
It was. And he got a standing ovation from the crowd after the game because they won. They beat Edmonton. And he had a standing ovation. And not only that, but Cam Talbot, fellow goalie for the opposing team, actually came back out like to the edge of the ice to like stand there and give him a little goalie to goalie salute, which just like that broke me. I was in tears.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was, and everybody was talking about it. It was such a show of good sportsmanship, not only by the fans, by the players. You know, they did the stick tap thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was amazing. And they showed his wife at the last game. You know, they got a big hug and everything after the game. So part of me is like, if we're going to have a battle of goalies, and you've got Henrik Lundqvist on one side, and you've got Craig Anderson on the other side,
mm-hmm.
I would like to see Craig Anderson like kind of move on, just because that's a narrative that has been pretty compelling this season.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with good hockey. It's just a good story.
Sometimes it does, because sometimes that kind of thing, you cannot overestimate the amount of difference that emotions can make in a game that moves so fast and relies so much on reflex, especially with somebody like a goaltender who, I mean, it, so much of that is based on just reflex and gut and stuff because the puck moves so fast. So it's possible that sort of thing, being bolstered by fans, can bolster him enough to change his mental state a little bit.
Maybe. We'll see. I still think I'm going to have to go with New York for it, though.
Oof. Ah.
That's the pick of my head. The pick of my heart is Sens, the Ottawa Senators. But all I think I'll just be a little contrary. So we have a little differing of opinion here.
Yeah, so far and we're on opposite teams.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I'm not going to say that I'm going to root for New York, but I'm going to, because I'm Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, don't do that.
But I do think that I think they're going to take it. All right, so flipping over to the Western Conference, we have Nashville and St. Louis Blues.
You know, my brain doesn't really have a strong, like, I feel like these teams are also pretty well matched, but I think Nashville is going to ride the high of the fact that they were sort of the underdogs, and I think they're going to carry on with that. So I'm going to say Nashville, and that's also, I think, the pick of my heart, because again, I like PK Subban. I really enjoy Nashville's yellow uniforms, although I quite adore the Blues uniforms as well. So I mean, honestly, I would be happy with either of them, but I'm going Nashville.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Nashville as well. I mean, St. Louis made a couple trades towards the end. It felt like they were giving up a little bit and just kind of offloading some resources. Shattenkirk went to Washington. I think I'm going to go with Nashville for this one as well. I don't have a dog in this race, so either team wins, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm not going to be crushed the way I'm going to be if Washington gets knocked out. But yeah, I think it would be a nice narrative to see Nashville carry that through. So, all right, the final matchup of the two teams, which is Anaheim and Oilers. Mm-hmm. Dare I guess?
Yeah. I think you can probably guess what I'm going to say, and it is a head and a heart pick. You know, Anaheim is a good team. They're a good team, and they play in a way that I don't particularly like watching, but they are skilled. And I think it's going to be a hard battle, but I have to go with the Oilers because I would hurt myself in my heart if I did anything else.
Well, you didn't have them winning. You didn't have them going to the Cup.
No, that's true.
Your original bracket.
That is true.
Has that changed? Has that feeling changed?
Well, I originally thought they were going to go up against Chicago. So, like, in the way I had it all laid out, I didn't think, silly me, I didn't think we could beat Chicago. Now, at this point, it could be Nashville or St. Louis, and I think they have a better chance of going to the Cup than I thought they did. So,
Anaheim is not a team that I particularly enjoy either. There's only a few teams that I could say about, and Chicago, is one of them. Mm-hmm. And Anaheim, I just don't like their style of hockey, I think. Mm-hmm. But they're very good. They're very good at what they do.
They are.
I just think Edmonton is a little bit more creative. Any team that can come back after a 7-0 loss and win and not let that and win away, win in another arena. Do you know what I mean? Not at home without, obviously you had crowd support, but the crowd wasn't there. They were back at Rogers Place in Edmonton. I think that says something about that team, that they can bounce back after that. So they've got a lot of heart. So I think I'm going to throw my lot in with the Oilers.
All right. So we're together in the Western Conference.
In the Western Conference. We just have a little bit of differing opinion on the Eastern Conference. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Another thing about the Oilers, too, is that Anaheim is a team that is known for being tough, for hitting, lots and lots of hitting. And I cannot remember the exact stats, but I remember early in mid first round, the Oilers had as many hits as several of the other teams. Like the number of hits in the first period of almost every single Oilers game that they won was really high, sometimes twice as much as the other team. So I feel like that's the kind of thing that in years past, we probably would not have been able to take Anaheim just simply because they're a more physical, tough team. But the Oilers are so much more physical and tough than they used to be that I think it's going to be much more interesting on that front.
All right. So we have our second round brackets picked. We're good. Doesn't mean anything, but it's fun.
It's still fun.
Well, now that the season's over, we've been getting a lot of press conferences, a lot of dressing room cleanouts, which usually is a time for the players and the coaching staff to talk to the press about what happened, what they're going to do about it, where they're going next. The interesting thing to me, again, this being my first playoff series, is all of the injuries that are being reported now. Mm-hmm. Now, there's this weird thing in hockey that if you're a new hockey fan, it kind of drove me crazy a little bit in the beginning, because they would say, oh, so-and-so player is out with a lower body injury. I'm like, what does that even mean? Is it a knee? Is it a foot? Is it something? But then I realized you really don't want to let that information out, mm-hmm. because hockey is such a physical game, and there's moments when it's a little dirty, mm-hmm. and you don't want an opposing team coming after your guy and, like, you know, slashing his knee or something, or doing something that's going to aggravate an existing injury and possibly take that player out for the rest of the season. So we have, so you'll hear all these things, you know, a player's out with an upper body injury, a lower body injury, or, you know, some sort of unspecified thing. Well, now you're finding out what all those things are. And sometimes it's just, the player is obviously, there's something going on with the player. We think he's playing hurt, but we don't know why. And mm-hmm. there's been a lot of that as well. And I know, and they just never tell you that a player has been injured and they're just kind of trying to work through it, or that's why their game is off, until after the season's over and you realize that, oh, Patrice Bergeron of the Boston Bruins has been playing with a sports-related hernia all season long, yeah. is going in for surgery tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting thing too, is that quite often they will have surgery scheduled basically for the day after.
Yes.
The day after the team is knocked out of the playoffs, or in some cases, you know, if it gets bad enough, then they're just not going to be able to play even in the playoffs. But yeah, Joe Thornton is another one who had, was it a torn MCL and
ACL?
I think it was MCL and ACL. I think it was both.
Two torn ligaments in his knees.
Yes. But he was just like, you know what? Either way, he's going to have surgery. So if he can play through the pain and help his team, which he did, not on off, but he did, then why not do that? Because he's got to do surgery either way. And then that's just how it works. So yeah, I think he had his surgery yesterday or something, or today. Yeah.
Day, actually, as we're recording this day before on the 25th. I think he had a surgery today.
Yeah.
And I was just listening to a press conference in the car earlier. It was a tape of an earlier press conference with somebody from Vancouver Canucks. And I came in late, so I don't know who was talking. And they were talking about one of their players is going in for hip surgery tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And the reporter asked, is this a new injury or is it related? And like, well, no, it's been going on all season. He's been having problems. That's why this player's been having rest days and maintenance days and things. I thought, you know, that's significant. If you have to go in for surgery and get something tweaked, and they're like, well, it's just routine.
Oh, anything,
the things that these goalies do,
surgery,
players do.
Surgery and the word routine, like I understand that they can be paired up in certain contexts, but in this case, I mean, sometimes people complain about how much money sports figures get paid. And I think in all sports, but in hockey is the one that I follow specifically, like, look at all of the damage that these people are doing to their bodies to give us entertainment and to give themselves, you know, the thrill of playing and the money itself and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, there are lasting damage things that happen to these players, and it's I try to keep that in mind when I'm watching.
Yeah.
Like, thanks guys, like I recognize the sacrifices you are making.
There was pictures going around the internet yesterday of Logan Couture's mouth, his teeth.
Oh,
mm-hmm. At the end of the regular season, he got hit in the face with a puck and just shattered his teeth. And I think at one point he actually had his like palate wired together to hold his teeth in his mouth. I mean, it was an awful, awful injury. And he was only out a few days, and then he came back and was playing with a full cage. So mm-hmm. nobody could kind of jam his face, because he was still, it was incredibly painful, incredibly injured. He couldn't chew. He couldn't eat solid foods, but he was out on the ice. And I don't know whether that's brave or stupid. I can't figure it out.
I know. I mean, in part, I think it depends on the injury, too. Like, if the injury is bad enough that it's going to hurt your level of play, going out there is just going to hurt your team.
Yeah.
But if it's something like that where, you know, it's your mouth and you can still focus through the pain or whatever. I suppose that's brave.
I know. I'm not quite sure where I fall on that one. So apparently he's having lots of surgery in the off season to fix his face because it got trashed. It got wrecked. So many hockey injuries. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's it. That's like all the hockey news. We've got new hockey starting tonight. We've got two begins. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. I may not survive it, but I'm still very excited about it.
Yep.
And we also have in news outside of the NHL, the final team rosters for the Men's World Championship and the International Ice Hockey Federation are due on April 27th. And there was news today that, Austin Matthews will not be playing for Team USA.
That is a surprise.
I'm sure there's fruit baskets and baskets of kittens have gone to waste in trying to woo him. But from what I read is that he just needs a break. He did play in that championship last spring, had some time off over the summer, played in the World Cup of Hockey, played 82 games a season. He played every game, played in the playoffs, and he's just needs to give his body a rest. You were talking about bodies being exhausted at the end of the series. But part of me, because I just see conspiracies everywhere.
Oh, dear.
I live with a tin hat, that I have to wonder. One commentator said, it was kind of suggested by the Leafs management that, this might not be, you just need to give yourself a break. You need to give your body time to heal, to rebuild. And I'm thinking, they just don't want him to play against Canada now, do they? Or they don't want to deal with the bad press of him playing against Team Canada.
Oh, I can just picture the Toronto media just their heads all exploding on camera at the same time if that were to happen. So maybe it's for the best.
Yes, I'm sure he does need, but come on, he just turned 20. What does he need to rest for? He doesn't even need to eat properly. He's like energy to burn. But all right, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and just assume that, he's a good hockey boy. He could use a vacation.
Feel like he has earned it, if nothing else.
He has definitely earned it. Mm-hmm. And there's more worlds in his future, I'm sure. Oh, but if he's in worlds, it means he's not making the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, so maybe not.
Maybe not. We'll see. Mm-hmm. In other news, LA Kings have hired a new coach, which basically they just reached down the pile and pulled up assistant coach John Stevens to take on that mantle, and who has been with the organization since 2010. Interesting. He's not the first assistant coach that's been bumped up. This happened with the New York Islanders this year when they fired their coach and just put their assistant coach took in and did a pretty good job, actually. So, you have to wonder whether this is sort of a temporary thing, sort of a holdover until they try to figure out what they're going to do, or if they really were grooming him to take this position. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that organization to know. I guess just having seen that happen before, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull in another coach, especially if he doesn't do very well at the beginning of next season. And it is also interesting too that they had such a big change there, not only the head coach but the general manager, that putting somebody in place from within the organization, like, I'm not sure if that is a good move just to retain some continuity, or if it's going to be a tricky thing to have somebody, still from the old regime in there when all this new blood comes in to take over. So it will be just sort of interesting to watch that play out and see what happens.
Yeah, it is. Again, I don't know a whole lot about LA Kings, but I love all this off-season stuff that happens and who's going to go where. And I think I said this maybe in our Slack channel, I'm not sure, that it just feels like at the end of the season, they pick up the hockey board and shake all the loose pieces off, and they all end up in a pile. And then they just kind of reach in and figure out where they're going to put that piece next. So it's pretty unusual that you get somebody completely new coming in. Now, I did hear a rumor, and there's supposed to be a press conference today at some point, or tomorrow as we're recording this, that the Vancouver Canucks are hiring a new coach, and they're actually bringing up somebody from their AHL affiliate team. Is the rumor that I heard. Now, that we'll see what happens. But, you know, usually specific rumors like that tend to have a grain of truth to them. So by our next podcast, we will know who is going to be coaching, hopefully, the Vancouver Canucks next year.
Yep. Coach go-round continues.
Yes, it does. Where will it end? Nobody knows.
Well, some GM somewhere probably knows, but we don't.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Not yet. And that's all. That's all that's happening until we get some new hockey.
Yeah, well, that means that it's time to learn something new about hockey, don't you think?
I think so. How about we chat about icing? It's time for What the Puck, the things that everyone knows, but everyone had to learn sometime.
So, Deb, what the puck is icing?
Icing. Icing is one of those things that happens 400 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what is it and what does that mean? At least I was when I first started watching hockey. But it's one of those, it's probably that and offsides is the most common call in hockey. So,
and if you're watching. For me, those were the two that were the hardest for me to learn, which is kind of ironic considering how often they happen. And it still took me forever to figure it out.
It is. It took me a long time to figure out what both of them were. And I still sometimes get like, oh, is that offsides? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Like I need that linesman there to tell me what's going on. But we will definitely talk about offsides and even the referees and their roles in all of this in some future episodes. But for now, icing being one of the most common penalties called is it happens when it's a very simple thing. It's basically the players are dumping the puck, but there's some specific things that have to happen. So it's when a player shoots the puck across both the center red line, which is the line right in the middle of the ice where they do the initial faceoff, and the opposing team's goal line, and the puck isn't touched. Nobody touches the puck in the interim. So a player will whack it. It goes across those two blue lines. It'll hit the end of the boards, and then the whistle blows and play stops.
Yep. And I think a good way to think about this and really any kind of penalty or rule is to think about sort of the reasoning behind it. So the reason that we have icing is because, okay, so say the play is happening at one end of the ice and you got, you know, your team who's defending and then your team who is attacking. Well, imagine if the team who is defending, if all they had to do was just knock the puck as hard as they could and get it down to the other end of the ice, if that was legal, think about how long the game would be, because good grief, it would just constantly be skating all the way down the ice and then all the way back, all the way down.
Dumping and
the way
chasing,
back.
Dumping and chasing.
Yep. So in order to keep hockey a fast moving and interesting sport to watch, they make it so that when you are in your own zone or really anywhere on your half of the ice, you can't just get rid of the puck. It's kind of like the intentional grounding rule in football. Like the quarterback's not allowed to just get rid of the ball, not just throw it away.
Right. And if you are in your zone, which is your half of the ice where your goalie is, that's called the defending zone. That is your defending zone. So once the whistle is blown and the play is resumed, the referee will bring the puck back to your defending zone and you have to have a face-off and you start all over again. Now, this rule, like you mentioned, Erica, because it's to make the play continue and not just to have this boring skating up and down the rink sort of hockey game, it was introduced like way back in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And it's been around ever since. Now, there have been some tweaks. There's been some modifications to the rule. Basically, originally, it was used, people would just ice for a lot of different reasons. One of the reasons was if you ice the puck, you would give your team time for a shift change. So if your players are really tired, you would be able to ice the puck down, get the tired players off the ice while people were chasing the puck or trying to get to the puck. Your fresh players would come out on the ice, the play would be called, and then you would have fresh players going into the faceoff. But in 2005, they changed that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Now the players that are on the ice for the offending team, I love that term, the offending team, they got to stay. They have to stay there and fight that sucker out. So it serves no purpose to get your players off the ice because that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you still see it. You still see icing used strategically, particularly during a power play.
Yes. And that is one of the exceptions to the icing rule. And so if the other team is on a power play and you are defending against them and you've only got four skaters on the ice as opposed to their six, or excuse me, as opposed to their five, it is not against the rules for you to ice the puck. the whistle mm-hmm. will not blow. You're allowed to send it all the way down there. And there's some different people on different sides of that argument as to whether or not that should be the case. But mm-hmm. But it really does work strategically, because I mean, if you were to get called for icing during the power play and not be able to change your players at that time, you would have probably a goal on every single power play, because the people on the ice would be just so gosh darn tired. So in this case, you get to ice the puck, and that's when your penalty kill team gets to change, and the B team will come on next. And every time you ice the puck, you can switch out, because gosh, that's tiring.
Right. And a lot of times... Not a lot of times, but there are times that the goalie will come out of the crease and stop the puck, in which case it is not icing because mm-hmm. the puck remains in play. So typically during an icing or a power play, a team defending their, who are on the penalty kill, trying not to have the other team score, get a power play goal, they may ice the puck to get it away from their zone, to buy a little more time to help run the clock out, because a penalty could mm-hmm. be 2, 4, or 5 minutes, however long it's called for, depending on whatever the penalty is. So it does help eat up the time of that power play. But if a goalie doesn't want the play to stop and wants to continue the play, or strategically, they'll come out of the crease, stop the puck, pass it on to one of their other teammates, and the play will not stop and will continue. So there's a lot of strategy involved mm-hmm. in doing this. And sometimes you're just... If you're in the defending zone and your team is just being overwhelmed and it looks like they may get a goal, or it's just, you just are fighting for your life down there, you may just ice the puck, get it out of there, and figure, let's start fresh with a face-off. At least we'll be able to mm-hmm. regroup, get ourselves situated.
Yeah, because then you kill the momentum that team
exactly.
has going.
You kill the momentum, you give yourself a little bit of breathing space, everybody gets to reset. And mm-hmm. that can happen at any point during the game, and sometimes you'll see a team just ice the puck to sort of get it out and do, it's like the version of a reset button, actually.
It is. It is a little bit.
Hockey reset. So that's it. It's very simple.
Do we want to go into hybrid icing versus touch icing versus the different kinds of icing?
We could.
Well, I think it's important to point out that it's actually what the NHL uses now is called hybrid icing. And okay. With hybrid icing, that means that the play is stopped immediately if the player on the opposing team gets to the face-off dot first, which mm-hmm. it's kind of hard to talk about without a picture. But in the old version of icing, like just your basic icing the way it was for many, many years, if the defending team iced the puck as soon as it crossed the goal line, the line that's even with the net on the other side, there would be a whistle and boom. It was dead. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you would end up with players getting injured because they would skate so hard and so fast to get to the puck to catch it before it hit the hit that line. You would have them going so fast they couldn't slow down, and then they would injure themselves hitting the wall. So hybrid icing was a different type of icing intended to reduce the number of collisions along the boards. So if the puck is going down the ice and you've got your players who are chasing it, if your guy, the guy from the team, the again, hard to describe, but if your guy gets to the there's little hash marks around the face-off dot. So it's like the dot on either side of the net that's got the little hash marks around it. So if you can get to that point before the puck crosses that line, then you're good. It's not going to mm-hmm. be icing, and you can just keep going for the puck. Play is going to continue.
Yes, which is an important distinction. And that was, again, hockey rules are not static. They do try to, they change them a little bit to sort of address situations that are happening as they can see, observe mm-hmm. things. They have a big GM meeting every year and they'll discuss a rule.
Yep.
They'll discuss a rule that's controversial. So mm-hmm. hybrid icing kind of came out of one of those.
Yep.
So.
And actually, I think I described the old-fashioned type of icing. And actually, the automatic icing is actually what I described. So that's where if it crosses that goal line, boom, it's icing. Play is called dead. There's a whistle. Actually, what the NHL used to have was called touch icing, which meant that you had to catch up to that puck in order to get there. So
right.
I see. So. See, this is why it took me so long to learn it because they would talk about hybrid icing, they would talk about no-touch icing, and it was very confusing. There are some proponents of going just straight to automatic icing and just having play stopped immediately once the puck crosses the goal line, because then you don't have to worry about people skating so fast to try to get injuries. But the idea is that would make things less interesting because you'd have fewer races down the ice. I don't know. Right. I don't know if it's worth it.
This is one of those things that they don't say that's hybrid icing. They just call icing, and it's up to you to figure out which mm-hmm. form of icing it is, which is, so it's interesting to know those facts, the difference between hybrid and regular icing, because they'll just,
yeah.
They'll just, the announcer will say it's icing, and they'll bring it back to the circle, and they do a face-off. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I heard, maybe it's just a Canada thing that they say, you know, just icing, but it was talked about as hybrid icing occasionally. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what does that mean?
Right. So there you go. A couple different kinds of icing, but that's basically what it means, is a team has tried to get the puck, dumping the puck, and you get a penalty for that, and you have to come back, and you don't get a penalty, you get penalized and have to come mm-hmm. back into your defending zone, yep. into the face-off, which means those players are closer to your goalie and closer to the net, and the chances of them getting goal are higher. You don't want the face-off in your defending zone. You need to be in the offensive zone for that.
Especially when you're tired and can't change.
Yes. And speaking of being tired and can't change, mm-hmm. I think this is winding up this episode, which gives us just enough time for a hockey tidbit.
I do have a nice little just quickie. And once again, I'm going to dip into the ranks of awesomely named minor league hockey teams. There is a team in the ECHL network called the Florida Everblades. And I have to tell you, when I heard of this team, I was like, that is the greatest name ever. Because Florida, if you're not aware, has a great big swampy area called the Everglades. And hockey, of course, is played on skates, which are on blades. So the Florida Everblades is just that name became my instant favorite as soon as I heard it. Their mascot is I'm not sure if it's an alligator or a crocodile. Probably an alligator. But you know, that's not quite as cool. But he's sort of like in the shape of a skate in the picture with the name Florida Everblades as the blade of the skate. So it's pretty clever all around. So yay for the existence of the Florida Everblades.
You love your puns.
I do.
You really
do. Huge fan.
If you were a team with a pun, Erica will buy your jersey.
Yeah, quite possibly.
It's true.
Or a t-shirt. Maybe a t-shirt. You
love the puns. Mm-hmm. What is it with the ECHL league can just be so much more creative. I don't know. Or are they just out of names and they're just coming up with anything wacky?
Maybe.
My thought is it's small markets, especially in the South. They kind of have to be creative to get all mm-hmm. those.
Yeah. And actually, the day that this drops, I would like to point out that the Florida Everblades are playing the Orlando Solar Bears, who I have mentioned before in a hockey tidbit. So that would be like my ultimate ECHL game. I wish I could go. I'm not in Florida, though.
No, that would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun. That's a great hockey tidbit. Thank you. We'll put a link to something with their logo in the show notes, I'm sure. So you can all see this awesome crocodile ice skate thing.
Yep. So until then, you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. Remember, hockey is for everyone, especially you.
Beginner's Puck is a Castor production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at Beginner's Puck, email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com, or leave a comment at theincomparable.com/puck.